Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Do you ever feel the news on artificial intelligence, all the new products, it's all racing by? Same, same. Well, we're going to explore one piece at a time. Periodically, we're going to take a kind of AI test drive. We're going to try out an AI product, learn the basics, and combine it with a conversation with an important voice. Yep, human voice. Today, we will start out with the interview and then move on to the technology test drive.
Hello, how are you?
We're talking to Professor Ethan Mollick at the UPenn Wharton School of Business. He requires his students to use AI.
You have heard the argument, when college kids use AI to write, isn't that cheating? Whereas you require them to use it. What's the point?
So there's a few points. One point is cheating is undetectable, so I can't forbid it. And the second is we have an incredibly powerful new tool that is available to everybody, and we need to figure out how to use it successfully because it's already here. So I'm not going to be able to make it go away. And it increases our ability to teach and our students' ability to learn and act in the world in ways that I think are worth us thinking about.
There's certainly, you know, a lot of concern over AI, what the potential is in all different aspects. You've written and you've told me that you think, used the right way, AI can provide us with better writing than we have now. Help us understand what you have your students do in that vein. How do you assign something to your students to get them or their writing to a better place than it is now?
So I think we have to be careful, right? I'm not a writing teacher. I'm an entrepreneurship teacher. And writing is an important skill to learn. But the AI is a good writer, right? It beats most humans on writing tests that we give it. It scores higher on tests. It does better when evaluated. It evaluates higher than most human writing. That doesn't mean that people don't need to learn how to write. But it does mean we have to think about how we change writing training. So that might involve things like treating writing AI with writing like we do calculators. So in the 1970s, there was a lot of conflict over how do we use calculators in classes, should they be banned? And now what happens is you have to learn to do math by hand and then you get to use a calculator. I might do the same thing with writing. Now, as an entrepreneurship professor, I'm very interested in my students using writing for persuasion, for pitching, for things like that. So I have them co-work with the AI to create writing. I use the AI to critique their writing and I give them prompts to do that.
All right then, challenge accepted. Let's use AI to critique my writing. So I have this AI program up. It's called Anthropic Claude. It's kind of like ChatGPT. And I'm pasting into the program two chapters from my book, A Village with My Name, my writing. And I'm typing in, critique this. And the answer comes, can I just say, immediately? Here's the response in audio form.
Tong skillfully weaves 20th century Chinese history into his family's personal story. We learn about major events like the Great Famine and Cultural Revolution through their impacts on real people. This puts a human face on the big picture.
Yes. And now, the however.
While some figures like Tong Daren are more fleshed out, other family members could use more dimensionality and interiority. We don't fully connect emotionally with them.
All right, that is a fair point. I have to say, this AI program, pretty good on first blush, Mr. Business Professor Ethan Mollick. So talk to us a little bit about the assignments and what you and your students are learning from these assignments. In some cases, you're asking students to use AI, say ChatGPT, to learn to do something they don't know how to do?
I require them to do at least one impossible thing. So if they can't code, I need working software from them. If they've never done design work, I need a full working website with all the images attached. So the capability of AI as a way of extending human performance is its most capable and exciting kind of angle. I call it co-intelligence. So I teach at a business school. People need to learn how to use this for their advantage.
As you're saying, you told me over the phone that ChatGPT in different settings can bring many people up to, say, the 80th percentile, so many can do certain things better than they do now. Does it also bring criminals up to the 80th percentile, make them better than they otherwise would be?
Yeah, I think that's one of the realistic concerns about the future of AI. I mean, I think people are genuinely worried, and they should be, about, like, what does this mean in the long term? What does it mean for jobs? But in the short term, it is certainly a concern, a major one, that we count on criminals and bad actors to be pretty incompetent. And if it boosts their performance, that's not great. I mean, the AI, the current large language models don't work as like a super intelligent hacker. But what they can do is basically look up information about you and write an email that you really want to click on. Another thing that they can do is we can use them to imitate someone's voice or even video. So you can get a call from the voice of a loved one who asks you for money.
So what do we do about that if in some cases it makes the bad guys better than they otherwise would be?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a downside risk, just like the fact that you shouldn't trust any information you see online anymore because it can all be easily fabricated. It is a downside risk of AI. So it does a lot of good things and a lot of very bad things.
All right, here is where Professor Malik gives me another prompt. Try to use AI to do my job, to do journalism. All right, so I'm typing into my AI program, write me 4 tough questions for Ethan Malik about the risks of AI. Survey says,
as AI advances, it may disrupt huge sectors of the economy through job automation. This could worsen inequality. In your view, can we reskill the workforce fast enough to offset massive displacement from artificial intelligence?
That is a very good question. Will AI replace, say, journalists who do research, who make calls, who write emails? Let's ask them. If AI can, say, replace what, you know, an entry-level researcher, you know, or a short-term intern can do now, and those jobs go away, how do, say, young college graduates climb up that first rung of the ladder to get that first job?
I think you're asking a really key question. I think that the issue is not so much replacement of everybody's jobs. Your job is not actually one thing. It's a bundle of things, right? It's doing research for this interview. It is conducting the interview itself. It's filling out expense reports, right? All the stuff we like to do and don't want to do. And what tends to happen is you end up handing off parts of that job, like maybe you'll never do an expense report again because the AI will do it for you. It doesn't mean your job is lost. Now, on the other hand, I am very concerned about exactly the issue you raised, which is when I teach somebody at Wharton, I think we do a really good job teaching them, but we don't teach them all the details of how to become a journalist, for example. Instead, my students will go join NPR and they'll start from the bottom as interns. And you'll tell them how to be a better journalist because they'll write an email and they'll say, no, that's not the right way to email, you know, somebody. Mm. They'll write a script and you'll say, actually, can we punch that up a little? And that's how they'll learn. Now, the question is not, is AI going to be as good as you, an expert journalist from NPR? It's not going to. But is it going to be as good as your intern that you bring in? And do you really want to deal with a human intern? Or would you rather just have the AI do it? And I think that is going to create a crisis. I think we're going to have to think about how we change education in many ways, including how to include more apprenticeship in what we do. So what's likely to happen is jobs are going to change and evolve. They're going to overlap with AI in ways that are, you know, hopefully good. When we survey people after they've used AI, they report both being happy and scared. Scared for the reason you talked about, what happens to my job, what does this mean? Happy because they've just outsourced the most boring parts of their work.
Just before I let you go, I have to tell you, so as I'm talking to you and my colleague, producer Shirley, is on the line listening to us, and her Slack message to me just now is, should we be curled up in a fetal position now?
Okay, so the answer is generally no, if that's helpful. But what I would say is I think that the one thing I want to emphasize is the thing I told you before. Like, I think you need to use these systems kind of until you have a little bit of an existential crisis. Because I think afterwards you can start to see the limitations. I don't think anyone knows the future. There's a bunch of scenarios. There's a bunch of possibilities. But I will say, I do think that it's pretty safe to say that the AI you're using today is the worst AI you're ever going to use. And we need to start thinking about what that means.
Yeah. Well, more to come. Ethan Malik, professor of entrepreneurship, technology, and education at the Wharton Business School. As for us, well, as we do more AI test drives, we will get a range of voices, including some far more concerned. And they worry about bigger risks than, say, a radio journalist replaced by artificial intelligence.
You're listening to Here and Now